By the way, I've been looking at a lot of Airbnb stuff like I do when I'm stressed.
Yeah.
And I read you this review I found. So I was looking at this house and I'm like
Is
reading
it in
every
Costa
review.
Rica? Smart.
And a German wrote this review. So it was in German, their review, and then it got translated to English. And they gave the place 5 stars. This is what they wrote, and I want you to listen to every damn word.
Okay.
Grandma's house is at the center of the city, so you can walk to many restaurants and the supermarket. Yet you can relax in the rather quiet and spacious garden. The pool is beautifully refreshing. The free washing machine use was great for us. The apartment fits Grandma's house. Smile. It's a little clairvoyant, which I was sorry for the others because our baby just dangled. The sofa bed is crooked and makes a lot of noise when you move. Otherwise, as described with well-equipped kitchen, Silvio's family is very friendly and helpful. What do we think happened there?
You know,
The house. No, I'm just going to read you the part again. It's a little clairvoyant, which I was sorry for the
it's
others
the
because our
baby
baby just
dangled.
dangled.
That's really hard. I just
what
think
do we think that what you're like, okay, so that's a translation issue, but like both of those, it'd be one thing if it was like our baby just dangled or the house is clairvoyant and the kitchen is nice.
Pick a
But
lane.
those coupled together makes me think something happened and
Something
I
is
feel like I need to
afoot.
stay there
Yeah.
to.
Yeah. And it sounds like the water is perfectly refreshing. And so there's that part, which is nice. But the
Like
baby dangling.
they're weighing the fully equipped kitchen right next to being like, listen, the house is a little clairvoyant and your baby might dangle. But like I'm picturing, you think what I think, right? That it if you were to translate it, it says like the house is a little haunted and our baby did
It
like
was,
suspend midair at one
yes, but it
point
felt
and
dangled.
float.
So it did seem like something was holding it. It wasn't just, you know, what's concerning is that the German word for dangled, and I just wonder like what other word it was supposed to be. Our baby, you know what? Babies be dangling.
Babies be
Do you think Griffin would
dangling.
like to be dangled? I actually think he would. I think he
No,
would.
I don't think anyone wants to just float midair without permission.
Griffin loves an adventure. He
Without.
loves to be thrown around.
He does love to be thrown around, but by human hands. I do think that that is different than just like
Okay.
suddenly floating
Hey,
up in the
I
air.
stand. I'm not. Hey, I want to be clear, ghosts of the world. I'm not condoning non-consensual baby dangling. I think that's important to say
Don't
because I feel like people might
dangle.
be. I think people might get confused and think that I'm condoning that behavior, of which ghosts I am decidedly not.
You heard her.
You heard
Don't
me.
dangle.
Don't dangle. Quinn, have you watched Real Housewives of the Mormon Wives yet?
No, you know I've been watching The Perfect Couple
I
and we
know.
finished last night.
I haven't finished yet.
It's great. It's couldn't love it more. It's Big Little Lies all over again. What's not to love?
You know what? Nicole Kidman is very good in those roles. She's
So
great.
good.
She's
Like
great in all of
actually,
those.
she's still got it, baby.
She's been
You
in a
watch her and you're
couple of
like,
those.
yes,
I feel like
she's
she's also
awesome.
that chick works, man. She's got like, I don't, what is her schedule like? When do her and Keith Urban get a day off? You know? I just want to know
She's
what
married to her
happens.
work.
She's married to her work.
We should all be so lucky.
I've seen, obviously I saw the first two episodes with you. What I love about The Perfect Couple is the big dance number that comes out of nowhere, which is
I read about it last night and I read that it was like
it was
totally
dramatic.
divided the cast and
Yes.
everybody was like, we
I'm
don't
calling
want
my
to do it.
agents. They're like, I'm calling my manager.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it.
And spoiler alert, I'm not going to tell you anything about the actual plot in this spoiler alert, but I am going to tell you a fun tidbit, which is that in the last episode, they show you at the very end the dance with the director doing it with the cast.
Okay,
And you're like,
so
what a weird peek behind the curtain
I'm
that I
in.
wasn't expecting.
Here's the thing. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because I've been thinking about this often. I actually just was talking to Matt about it the other day. I love a blooper reel or a smash cut sound like a music video to credits. I love breaking, corpsing, some people call it, which I love. But I love like people, they call it corpsing in the UK, which I like. So it's like when you laugh in the middle of a scene. And Matt was telling me that I think it's in Predator that after like the Predator is probably like a pretty self-serious movie, right? I wouldn't say it's like kind of like a romp. I think it's an action romp, but I don't think it's like billed as a comedy in any way. Mm-hmm. I think it's Predator. But at the end of the movie, what they do is they have like a music video and they have all the people that died after they die sort of like take a look at the camera and kind of like cheese a little. And it made me just want to like make a movie that is the most horrifying horror film ever. And then at the end, do like a fun pop song musical number with the whole cast. And I feels like, because the dance number doesn't match the tone of A Perfect Couple, which is what I like so much about it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's just my pitch. I want a blooper reel. I want a music video at the end of every, I don't care how serious, I don't care how Oscar buzz worthy the film is. I still want it. How's that?
Do you know that Matt made a documentary and at the end the guys that made the documentary hired a team of Bollywood dancers and music video producers to work with them to create a Bollywood music video that they all are in at the end of the movie.
I love that. No, I didn't know that. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's the movie's called Big in Bollywood. So it wasn't just like,
see, I would be
totally
like
totally an unrelated medium, but it was like a very, very fun experience that, and my dad, who I don't know if he really watched the movie. I think he fell asleep during it when we showed it to him. Fine. But he was obsessed with the music video.
Okay, so that's the thing. Name a movie that wouldn't be improved by a blooper reel or credit sequence music montage.
Schindler's List.
I think it would work. I think it would work. Okay. I think it would work. Hell, I think like Life is Beautiful, the saddest, most beautiful film. If at the end of that, everybody was like laughing and giggling, I'm in.
That makes sense. Because like, you and I also... That's our language. It's like sadness into laughter is the only path. Yeah.
But sure. Like imagine watching Pearl, right? We watch Pearl together.
I think that does happen at the end of Pearl.
Something like that. But something like – I just think like every – I'm thinking of like even the most self-serious film. Okay, like Moonlight might not work, but I still think it would. I still think like a musical number would have been great.
Yeah.
Tonally, probably problematic and not great. But anyway, okay, well.
When I think of a musical number, it puts that music in my head that I was playing you the other day. The Trump mashup with The Simpsons.
They're eating the cats.
The cat.
They're eating the dogs.
They're eating the pets in Springfield.
The memes that came out of that were good. I mean, I'm always impressed. People are so talented. People are so talented.
Sometimes through the darkness, all you can do is meme. I'd love to sing a song, but first I'll introduce you to Carrie Ipama.
And I'll introduce you to Quinlan Posner, or just Quinlan.
Just Quinlan for now. Thank you.
Just kidding. Do we tell them why?
No.
Q-Dog. Right. What if you change your name to Q-Dog?
Oh my God, I really like
and
that.
And I'm K-Dog.
Carrie Ipama and Q-Dog from now on?
And
let's
like,
try it.
And what's great is we wouldn't explain it to any of the listeners who know you and be like,
let's just see if it sticks.
Cute.
Carrie
what
Ipama
about Q-tip?
Q-Dog. Ugh, it's too sexual.
Is it because you're turned on by cleaning your ears with a Q-tip?
You know that I am.
I do. I'm sorry. I promise I would never say that on mic. I'm so sorry.
I did go too deep the other day and have that moment where I was like, ow, oh no, oh no, oh no, oh no. And I was like, am I going to have permanent damage? And then I think of that scene in Girls where she like Q-tips her head, basically, her brain.
Wait, I don't know that
scene.
Gotta
be careful.
And I've never gone too deep like that.
It's terrifying. I don't recommend
a QT.
This is disgusting. You're listening to Truly.
Darkly. Cringly.
And we're going to thank the listener by the name of Rachel.
Rachel, 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 you are
will be there for you. We're going to tell you two stories.
Rachel, we'll be there. Rachel, Rachel.
One of them might be gory.
Rachel, Rachel, Rachel.
Of your haircut.
Rachel, Rachel. Go play in the fountain in Central Park.
Do it. All right. I'm going to tell a story. Wait, are you or me?
Oh, it's me.
I'm going to tell a story.
It's me.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm telling the story of a girl named Lucky. Okay, so I got this information from Prime Crime, Tallahassee Democrat, and Law and Crime. I'm going to take you back to April 8th, 2018 in Jackson County, Florida. This guy, Joshua Emanuel, he's driving to work through a small town in Florida, which you already know, the story is going to be rough. We're in Florida. He's driving his car and he goes under an overpass. And it's one of those situations where a police car is right there by the overpass. And so he's driving and you know that feeling where you're like, fuck, was I speeding? You just like really are in your head. Well, the police car pulls out and is behind him, right? And he's driving and you know, you're just like, you're going 10 and 2 and you're like, stay in the speed limit. So he's going and he hasn't seen any lights, no sirens, and the police car is following him for 3 miles. And then he sees the dang lights. So he pulls over. At this point, he's, I think like 25, 26 years old. It's mid-20s, Sheriff's Deputy Zachary Wester. He gets out of his police car. He approaches Joshua's car and he's like, license and registration, blah, blah, blah. He does say that he already ran his plate number and he found out that his license was not valid. And so when he asks Joshua, is there anything in the car that I need to know about? Joshua says, I have a gun in the middle console of my car. And
the console.
Yeah.
Did you say the console?
Probably the console.
Okay.
He's like, I have a gun in the console.
Mm-hmm.
Am I saying that right?
Console. Yeah.
Did I fuck
it's
it?
It's just like the console is like, if this just means a different thing. I think it means.
Quinn, do you think like, I've lost all credibility in the story?
Seek counsel. I mean, console should to
I,
find out.
Should I leave? Should I?
Please go.
I gotta, hey, I think it's it. I'm calling it. Bye, everyone. It's been real. It's Q Dog and you for now.
Q Dog in the house. Don't worry.
They're like, we're not. We love Q Dog. So anyway, so the gun is in the center, student council, and the officer is like, okay, do you have a concealing concealing carry permit? And the guy's like, we're in Florida. It's a lawless swamp. You actually don't need it. And the officer's like, cool. Yeah, same. Joshua gets out of the car at the officer's, not suggestion, but at the, what is the word I'm looking for?
He's like, hey,
would you mind?
Got out of the car.
Could you do me a solid? Can you get out of the car? So Joshua.
Only if it's not annoying.
Only if you don't mind. I know you have to go to work. I'm so sorry. Can you get out of the car? So he gets out of the car and they take him by his police car. And Wester is like, do I have your consent to search your car? And Joshua's like, you know what? I have nothing to hide. Sure, go for it. And he's like, the law's on my side. We good. So Wester's looking through the car, going back and talking to Joshua, going and looking at the car, going back to Joshua. And there's like another, you know, officer of the law there as well, but he's not searching the car. And Officer Wester comes back and he's like, hey, I found something that I don't like. I was looking in the area between the passenger seat and the center console. Did I say it right? I was looking, yeah. And I saw a syringe. And when I picked it up, there was a bag and there was some like powder residue on it. And it's not looking good. Is this yours? And Joshua's like, no, that's not mine. And he's like, it's not looking good. I'm going to have to do a field test. So he does a field test and he informs him, here, I'm going to read you your rights. Because what I found is it tested positive for methamphetamine.
Mm-hmm.
Joshua is like, whoa, that's not me. I don't know whose that was. Wester's like, do you lend the car out? He's like, I have a bunch of employees. When I take the money to the bank for a deposit, I have to take an employee with me. Maybe an employee put it in the car. And Wester's like, listen, if you if it's under your car, like it's your responsibility. We found it in your car. It's yours. You're going to jail. He's like, I don't use drugs. He like takes off his shirt. He's like, I have no track marks. Like, I promise you, this isn't mine. I don't know what's happening. He calls someone. He's like, I think I'm getting arrested. He's like, I don't want to talk anymore. Right. Cause you probably should stop talking if that's the case in these situations. Just PSA. So Joshua gets arrested and he is taken to jail. Now his dad used to work in the federal prison and his family knows the lieutenant of the prison. And so he calls his mom. His mom makes the call to the lieutenant. The lieutenant has a conversation with Joshua. So he knows people in the system, which helps him in this moment. And they interview him and they're like, is this yours? He's like, it's not mine. I have no idea how this got here. Please believe me. So they release him on a conditional release. So he still has to go through court. There, it is a felony to have the possession of a methamphetamine. So he's in deep shit. And this is going to fuck his life over for the next 2 years. And what's really crazy is that he is not the only person to claim the same thing. A little bit about Zachary Wester. He is the son of a police officer. He actually got his first job as a deputy in 2015, though he left less than a year after amid allegations of sexual misconduct. Nothing has been proven. Like I said, these are allegations. And in 2016, he starts to work at the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, where he has a reputation for being an aggressive patrol deputy, as well as he has an impressive number of drug arrests. And they're noticing this pattern. He pulls people over for, you know, your taillight is out or it's going in and out or you're speeding or whatever. He finds a way to get consent to search the car. And he tends to find a lot of methamphetamine in these cars. Now, to be clear, we're in Florida. Methamphetamine is rampant there and it's affecting this community. But you see body cam footage of these people being told that there's drugs in their car and they are firmly denying it, in some cases, aggressively denying it. And it's a tough thing to talk about too, because if they are your drugs, wouldn't everyone deny that? You know, I mean, you would, but the thing that's interesting is that if you have drugs in your possession and you are pulled over, sometimes you freak out and you hide it in your like nearest area. And in some of these cases, they're like in an Excedrin bottle. They're like hidden in a bag or under the back seat or in a baseball glove. Like some of it just feels a little bit like, I don't know, maybe that's just where they're hidden. So this is affecting the people that are accused horribly. People are losing their jobs. They are losing their families. In some cases, they're losing access to their kids, to their grandkids. There are people who are accused who are sober, who might have been users before. And when their family thinks they're sober, once this comes out, they believe that they are not. And of course, that destroys your relationships. In 2017, prosecutors begin to feel suspicious of him because his police reports are a bit inconsistent with his body cam footage. And in addition, some of his body cam footage doesn't show him finding the drugs, or it gets deleted, or it's turned off. It's just not consistent. And it's very interesting because you watch him find these drugs, and from the body cam, it's almost like the body cam is facing a seat or an obstacle in the car, and he'll reach out of frame and he'll find a baggie that he will test and will test positive for methamphetamines. It's almost like a magic trick. But here's the deal. They don't have footage of him planting it. And I think too, with a lot of these people that are accused, it's their word against a police officer's. And so some people plead guilty. And according to the law, they are already guilty. At that point, like, they can't do anything. There can't be any recourse or any sort of, if you admit guilt, you are guilty of the crime. That is it. That is done. But there are many people like Joshua who are fighting this because he is like, this is not mine. There's no way this was mine in the car or anyone I know. He's like, I hire employees. There's no drug users in my company. It's not mine. One woman, an example of a woman or a man getting caught, is his wife made him a lunch like 5 minutes before the traffic stop. And when they searched his car, they found methamphetamines in his lunchbox. And she would later testify and be like, I made his lunch 5 minutes ago and there was meth in it. That's not real. And one case, this woman, Teresa Odom.
What's it doing for the, like,
what's the motive?
What is it giving? Yeah.
What they think the motive is that he wants to work in narcotics and street drug crime. And so truly.
That's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
That's so stupid.
That's stupid and insane. That's the dumbest thing
I've ever heard.
Yes.
He's basically like, I'm going to make my job the job I want it to be. Busting drug addicts by turning everybody I meet into a pretend drug addict and cosplaying that I figured it out.
Yes.
Like, what the fuck?
It's so fucked. And I think he does profile people. I think we are in a low income area. I will say Joshua, the first victim I talked about, will end up being their star witness because he is the most clean cut in some ways. You know what I mean? And he's like, there's no way it's me. I think he's trying to increase his drug convictions so that he could be put forth for a transfer to another department, to the narcotics department. You know what I mean?
That is so fucked up.
It's also like, he's shady. When he gets caught, I mean, I want to say in 2018 or maybe 2019, he's like 28 years old. Like, he's a kid too. That's what's so fucked. And what's really fucked up about it is that when he's pulling these people over, what's worse is he's nice to them. Do you know what I mean? You know the police I'm talking about.
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, that I'm your friend.
Yeah.
You're not my friend.
You're not my friend. You've just planted
Dropped a syringe into my car.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I've had police officers. I think I've told this story before where I've had a police officer pull me and my friends over and they're like,
you can sit.
Don't worry. Just tell us that you've been drinking. And we're like, we haven't. And fortunately, we had the truth on our side, but it's like they're using honey to try to trap you, right? There's a story of this woman, Teresa Odom. She gets pulled over and she had had a spoon in her car for eating yogurt. And what's interesting is we have body cam footage of him putting on the gloves to start the search. And you can see it very faintly, but it's the first video we have of possible footage of him holding the baggie before the search starts. But it's like he's palming it in one hand while he's getting the gloves on, and you could see it going out of frame and putting the baggie down and finishing putting his hands on. And it's this footage that like opens the case up, because at this point, prosecutors, it's really hard to prosecute a police officer, I think, for many reasons. One, their union is on their side. They are going to protect them no matter what. You need cold, hard evidence. And also with drug convictions and denials, you need a concrete case for people to believe and for a jury to convict this person of a crime. But would you be surprised to find out that he finds a baggie of drugs in Teresa Odom's car? And so once they have enough information where they can get a search warrant and they have enough probable cause, they look in his car, they find a stash of narcotics in the trunk that they think he used to plant on motorists in dozens of traffic stops. And in 2019, he is charged with 67 crimes in relation to 12 victims. He's accused of racketeering, official misconduct, fabricating evidence, false imprisonment, possession, and perjury. Like I said, people think his motive is to get into the narcotics department. And again, what's really fucked, I said it before, but I'll say it again, some people pled guilty right away because I think maybe they had
previous... That should be something that everybody learns from and looks at, because that's really interesting. And we've seen false confessions, and we've seen people trying to get deals and thinking it's their best shot. And it's not so simple, you know?
But it's also like there are people that, like some of the body cam footage, you have people with no teeth who are like screaming, like,
maybe it is mine.
No, but who are like screaming, like, it's not mine, man, like crying, like, it's not mine. I don't do that anymore. And I think people will say these are people who might have had past convictions and are sober,
mm-hmm.
and he's planted this on them.
Yeah, that's horrible.
And they can't, like, what are they going to say? It wasn't me, even though you have a previous conviction of me.
Wow, yeah.
And it's destroying their lives. It's like, these are people who have dealt with addiction and they're trying to gain back the trust of their family. And this guy comes and blows up their spot because he wants a fucking promotion. And these people's lives are destroyed. It's a felony. People are going to lose their job over this. Like Teresa Odom, the last woman I was mentioning, she's a grandmother. She wasn't able to see her grandchildren for years because her family didn't trust her.
And it's all for greed. It's all
it's not even like he's not even making any money from it. It's for his fucking ego.
Yeah.
And again, he's like he's a young guy. He looks very old. I'm going to say it. He looks very old for being such a young guy, which makes sense because, you know, being mean ages you. Just let it be known. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the case was very hard to build. There's not clear-cut eyewitnesses of him planting the drugs. The closest we have is a sliver of maybe a top of a baggie in a freeze frame impalmed in his finger. Like, we don't have a lot of evidence. Trial lawyers have looked at this and been like, I'm surprised the prosecutor is bringing this to trial. He's also a trained witness. Police officers, their whole job is to go to, I mean, not their whole job, but a huge part of a police officer's job is testifying at a trial. So he's someone who's also very comfortable on the stand. And it's very clear when he takes a stand that he is coached. The jury deliberates for 7 hours over 2 days. And on May 18th, 2021, he is convicted of 19 crimes.
Wow.
Which includes official misconduct, false imprisonment, possession, and racketeering. Before sentencing, you know, they can have victim impact statements. And again, he's not charged for all of the crimes that he committed because they couldn't build a case.
Can't prove them.
They can't prove them. But one of the victim impact statements was from Teresa Odom, who I mentioned was the last one who they saw a little bit of a baggie. And she said at his trial, "You've robbed me of my credibility. And as a mother and a grandmother for the last 3 years, I probably missed a year and a half of my grandbaby's life because of this. I wish you no ill will, and you never know what you've done to me until you have children of your own." He had 50 letters of support.
Ew.
July 13th, 2021, he is sentenced to 12 years, 6 months, and 8 days in prison. While he's there, he is actually transferred to an out-of-state prison to serve because they worry about his safety, probably because some of the people that he accused is maybe in prison with him. That's editorializing. I don't know if that's the case, but it seems like he's got a target on his back for sure. They also have dropped the charges in over 100 cases involving him as the officer because they can no longer, he's no longer a credible witness. They can't trust his police reports. And over 30 people have settled on $1 million settlement in court for his wrongdoings. But still, like I said, like, we've dropped 119 cases, over 30 people get $1 million. The trial, I think at the end of the day, only 3 of the people, justice was served in their case. And there's so many more people who he hurt, who have pled guilty, who will never get their day in court or who will never have their moment. And that's the story of Zachary Wester, a police officer who was planting methamphetamine in Jackson County, Florida.
Thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. I was looking, I'll tell you why I found it. I was looking, social media sometimes tells me cases, and there's this guy who said something about a police officer was taking his wife's hair and planting it at crime scenes around town.
Why?
Because he wanted to divorce her, but he didn't want the shame of the divorce. And so he framed her for crimes.
Way to do that.
And I was like, I have to look this case up. This is the most insane thing. And actually is 1000% a fear I have, which is like when I'm driving and my hair falls out, because hair's fallen out every now and then, I'll like throw it out the window. You know what I mean? For the birds to build a nest or something. And I throw it out and I'm like, what if this lands on a body? Or what if this lands in a crime scene? And they're like, Carrie Ipama, it was her hair. She's kind of worried about that. And then I was like, oh my God, this happened to a police officer's wife. So I went to go look up the story and I couldn't find this. And the only thing I could find was this Zachary fucking Wester piece of shit. And then I looked at the account again and I looked at the profile and it was like satirical fictional stories. And I said, that sucks. I was really mad. I was like, I really want to know what police officer's planting his wife's hair around town. Anyway, so that's it. That's why I found
that's
that
rough.
Story.
That's rough. And I appreciate the journey. It is like,
do you ever do like that? This. It's like you just, yeah.
Things like this happen. Oh, and it does remind me of my favorite anecdote, which was the time that my sister called me and was like, you have to do a story on the book that I'm reading. It is so crazy. And I was like, what's it about? And she was like, all these teenagers that like end up trapped in this kind of like abandoned carnival and they just start like killing each other in really, really crazy ways. And I was like, that doesn't sound like it happened. And then she was like, oh my God, I just looked, it didn't. This is fiction. And I was like, of course it is.
It's really good. And you kind of understand, you're like, I know how lies get told.
I mean, I life can be crazier than fiction. So yeah, it's, you know, some of the stories we tell.
We've seen it before.
You wouldn't be surprised. Some of the stories we tell are practical magic. So you just don't know.
Yeah, I did do that once, which is fun.
That might have been karmically what happened to you here.
It is. It is. But you know what? I take it. And I did find an interesting case. And I'm just glad that this guy had fucking – there was some – there is justice with this guy. Mm-hmm. His mm-hmm. family still thinks he's innocent. He still claims he's innocent. Pass.
I'm going to tell you the Barini haunting, and the information I got is from jamesmdean.com, yourghoststories.com, and Tumblr. And the real name of this family is not Barini, but we'll never know the real name because it's a secret, because we have to protect them. It's not Barini.
But it is,
and it's
Papini.
Not Papini.
Okay, just making sure.
And it's not Mamini. It might be. That'd be really funny if their last name was Mamini and they were like, let's just do Barini. They just rhymed everyone.
What if everybody's alias was just rhymes? This is not Carrie Ipama. This is Terry Fipama and Winlin Dosner.
Yes. And Q-Dog. Don't forget.
Sorry.
Investigators that work for Psychical Research Foundation, they came up with the name Barini. And they changed all their names. Now, the dad, again, not his name, Joe Barini, is like, let's pick up the fam and move to the place that I grew up in, New England. And my dad grew up there, and it's an old house that has been in the family a long time. Of course, people have died there, but me and my wife Rose and our two kids, well, the two kids are Rose's from a previous marriage, but they're their two kids. The four of them are going to go move. So it's Rose and Joe are the parents. John and Daisy are the babies. And this is in 1979, New England. So they're in this beautiful, creepy house living there. And one night, Rose hears a voice that sounds like a little girl, but Daisy's a baby, so it doesn't sound like Daisy. And the little girl is saying, Mama, Mama, this is Serena. And they're like, who is Serena? And Joe asks his dad, like, that we heard this creepy voice the other night. Do you know anything about this? And he's like, oh, yeah, I had a sister named Serena. Which I feel like is like a weird time to find that out about your dad. Like, are you guys not close that you didn't know he had a sister named Serena that died when she was 50 years ago? You guys should talk more. Serena will continue to talk, but what's interesting about it is the first time they hear her say anything, Daisy goes in to have her tonsils get taken out and something goes wrong and her heart stops and she almost dies. She's okay. But what's interesting is every time they hear Serena's voice, it feels like she's trying to warn them something's going to happen. They don't say like she's causing it, but it's this feeling of like they hear her voice and the next day Joe's grandma has a stroke. They hear her voice and the next day Joe's grandma dies. So it feels like it's always this beacon
of
doom.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like an omen. One really creepy time, Serena's voice wakes up Joe and Rose is next to him choking in her sleep. And he like wakes her up and she's like, oh my God, I was having a dream that my ex-husband was strangling me. But it just feels like these bad things are happening and Serena is trying to let the family know. Mm-hmm. She's around for a couple of years, but she stops showing up in 1981 and nothing goes on for a few months. But then that spring, a new haunting starts to happen where Rose wakes up and sees an 8 or 9 year old boy wearing all white clothing gliding up the stairs. And she says it was like looking through a milk bottle. Like creepy.
Yeah.
So this little boy will walk back and forth and not really do anything that feels scary to them other than the fact that he's a little boy in all white walking back and forth. And then the next night, he comes back and he speaks and he says to Rose, "Where do all the lonely people go? Where do I belong?" And it feels like you want to play the Beatles song or something.
Yeah, I
want to
play Eleanor Rigby. I just was thinking, like,
I was, we've got friends for you, but
people, where do they all come from? Okay, well, huge fan of the musicians, the Beatles.
Totally. Not clear if they were influenced at all by this little boy. Joe also sees the little boy and sees him go in and out of the rooms and in the house, and he's getting down on the floor and looking around. It feels like he lost something. So Joe is like clocking this and later goes to where the little ghost boy had been looking and pulls up the carpet and he pulls up the floorboards and he finds a weird religious emblem on a chain that's broken. And he's like, was it that kid's? Like, is it his? Is that what he's looking for? And then he's like, you know, I just remembered another kid did die in this house. My dad's younger brother, Giorgio, and he was 8. And you're like, hold up. How many siblings did your dad have and why were they all dying? This is a lot of dead kids that you're like just now remembering.
Also, what year is this?
This is now the 80s.
It feels like we should be talking about like the 1800s with how many young children are like not making it past. Like, did he grow up like not like in like
This was 50 years ago. It's Joe's dad. So this is like the 30s that these kids are dying.
Okay, still to have two dead siblings. Like, you feel like you like,
oh. I agree. And also to keep forgetting, like the way that everything, I'm not kidding. Every article that I read about this, they'd be like, and then it occurred to them there had been a child that matched the description that died.
Oh my God. Like,
what? God. Like, oh, maybe it's Giorgio. So then he goes and talks to his dad. He's like, whatever happened to your brother, Giorgio? And he's like, Giorgio, he was buried in all white in his first communion suit. And they're like, well, he's been walking around the house.
It feels like his dad's taking the piss out of him. It feels like he has all the right answers in a way that feels a little too convenient to me.
Sure. Or the dad's just like lying all the time. I like the idea that the grandpa's like, oh, like he wants to play into it. He's like, it must have been my sister, Serena. It must be my brother, Giorgio. And you're like, is it? So Giorgio's showing up like 2 or 3 times a week and he talks to them. He answers questions, but he does seem really upset. And at one point he tells them why. And he's like, my twin brother, Carlos, who's a grown-up and is still alive and lives close to here, took something from this house. And he seems pissed about it. And maybe that's what he's been looking for, but he does not specify what Carlos took. But he keeps saying, my I need help, and the only one that can help me is my oldest brother. And they're like,
another brother?
Well, then they're like, oh, do you think I'm your older brother? Like, Joe's like, I think you're thinking of my dad, who is your older brother, not me. Like, maybe you don't realize what time has passed because you're a kid ghost. I don't know. But they don't help him. They don't really figure out how to help him. But it's interesting because Serena was there. She was looking for help. They didn't really help her. And then she's like, all right, I'm out.
It's kind of like not nice.
And then Giorgio, I just feel like, you know, they had unfinished business. It felt like both of these little ghost children. And they don't really help. And in fact, when they go to their priest to be like, what should we do? The priest is like, probably ignore them. And you're like, that's very rude. So that's what they do. And Giorgio shows up again and Rose just ignores him. And I don't know why, but I feel really bad for him. And then Giorgio's pissed. So he goes and like slams a closet door a bunch of times, but nothing. And then he gets really pissed. And like a few days later, he shows up. They're just pretending they can't see him. And she's holding a package of pasta and it just rips and dumps out on the floor. So Giorgio's getting pissed. They have some priests bless the house. Doesn't matter. Giorgio shows again. And then they again are like, get out of here in the name of Christ. So they're trying to banish Giorgio. But this is a Christmas story. And the reason I say that is that it reminds me of A Christmas Carol because we had
two.
Yeah.
We're
and now
third?
It's time for the really scary one. Remember how the ghost from the future is like wearing the cape and is like looks like death and is way scarier than the Ghost of Christmas Past or whatever present?
No, because I've never seen it, but go for it.
You've never seen A Fucking Christmas Carol? You don't know the story?
I know
of
the
Christmas
story,
Carol?
But I don't
I'm
know the
deck you.
I'm, no, I know the story. I'm not like under a rock. I'm like, wait,
you haven't even
Christmas
seen the Muppet? You haven't even seen the Muppet version with Michael Caine?
No. And I've heard amazing things because he treats it like a full drama. Like he fully commits in a beautiful way.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good.
And I've heard that's the trick with the Muppets is you have to treat it like high art.
You have to be like, I'm going to win an Oscar.
I'm
going to
win an Oscar, yeah.
Well, so the third ghost is, spoiler alert, the scariest. He's wearing a cape. I don't know why I say he. We don't know that it's a he. But this is the worst by far. Both the other ghosts kept it pretty under control, even though Georgia was throwing some temper tantrums. So this other ghost shows up in June and then again a few nights later. And this ghost means business. He's hunchback. He's in a black cape. And he has big feet and a very scary, scratchy, deep voice.
Ooh.
And when it first appears, they're like, who are you? And it says, a minister of God. It doesn't seem like it's a minister of God because when Rose is praying, this creepy black-clad ghost will come up and start yelling like obscenities to interrupt the prayer.
Eek.
Yeah. And at the time, John the son is 15 and starts talking about how he's getting hit by shit flying around the room. Their bedroom telephone is flying across the room, hitting people. The lamp falls on Rose at one point and hits her in the head. Furniture's moving. It's very poltergeist. Daisy's whole desk flies the fuck down the staircase. And they have one of those attics that you pull, you know, when the stairs come down. And it keeps opening on its own, which feels very, very dangerous. Whatever this beast is, Rose is the one it hates the most. It's beating her up all the time. It's swinging the freezer door open and bopping her in the head. It's twisting her arms. It's choking her. And Joe even says that he sees Rose get levitated.
Dangled.
She gets dangled.
Oh my
she gets
God.
Dangled
Rose
by the fucking
ghost. Dangled?
And then dropped.
Okay.
On the floor.
Titanic, move aside.
Yeah. And she's just like banged up. She's black and blue from getting beat up by this poltergeist. 2 months after this guy's been showing up, beating on them, he gets even more violent. And Joe heads out to work and the bed starts to raise off the floor and slam down. The door is opening and slamming. The dog's going nuts. Everything's going bananas and Rose gets drug out of the room.
No.
Uh-huh. She's like running to go get her kids and she gets drugged across the floor
Pass.
Away from them and she's getting choked. She's getting scratched. She gets on the phone somehow. Thank God it's not flying across the room right then. She grabs it and calls Joe and he's like, be there in a jiff. And he is. And the bed's jumping. The bed's doing jumping jacks.
Ladies and
Rose is like,
home. The club is full of buzz and the book is full of grown. And all you fellas, leave your girl with the ghost because it's 11:30 and the bed is jumping, jumping,
jumping. Oh, God. Very scary stuff. Rose is in the corner. She's holding her crucifix up, trying to protect herself, but they don't move for some reason. But
they're not scared.
They're not scared. But then one morning they get up and there's a knife just stabbed in the middle of their dining room table.
Which is a
and they're
bitch
like,
to get
I
out.
I do feel like this is – it's funny that that's what does it. It's like the bed is jumping. Rose is getting beat up by a ghost. And then you see that knife and you're like, oh, well.
You see the knife clearly, that's hurt no
clearly
one.
Clearly we're not – I think we know when we're not wanted.
You see a knife that's hurt no one and Rose is like bloody and black and blue. And they're like, guys, this is getting really serious.
Well, so they get the priest to come back and do an exorcism. And then they're like, you know what? It does feel like there's no more evil. And that's kind of it. That's all that happens.
It feels like the ghost was misogynist.
They're like having PTSD from this. And they give the Psychical Research Foundation a call. And they're like, you're not going to believe the shit we've been through. You got to come. And they come. And they're like, so now what? And they're like, well, no. Then we had an exorcism and it stopped. And they're like, Okay. Well, we can't say whether this happened to you or not because you did call us a little late. But I think they like assumed weird stuff would keep happening and then it stopped. And then they had the researchers there just a hair too late. But, you know, they go and they talk to the Barini's friends and everybody's like, yeah, I witnessed shit. I witnessed shit. I saw poltergeist shenanigans. But it's kind of a famous story because it's treated as it definitely happened. And so what I would say is perhaps it did. We don't even know these people's names, but
we don't know their names. Nobody's seen it who worked. Okay, do you believe it happened?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, I have doubts. I have doubts. I love the ghost
trifecta.
I love a ghost trifecta. Who doesn't? Frankly, who doesn't?
Well, thanks for listening. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a good time had by all. Goodbye.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.